Barcelona Symphony Orchestra, the Irish Chamber Orchestra, the Israel Chamber Orchestra, the National Symphony Orchestra of Colombia, the New York City Ballet, Queensland Symphony Orchestra, indeed all over the world. But I don't think, as far as I'm aware, that the legend and truly wonderful soul who's heading up Musique as the Artistic Director of Musique, Rachel Werby, has actually conducted the Electric Light Orchestra. Is that right, Rachel?
That's correct.
Well, there's one to go. Yeah, I mean, as I said on the show earlier, I think we're privileged beyond words to actually have you. I mean, what a fantastic curriculum vitae, or to use the American translation, resume we have, really. It's genuinely fantastic. And this is before we even talk about you being a former First Lady of West Virginia, which is fantastic.
Yes, well, I've been privileged to lead an extraordinary life. I've always worked very hard at everything I do, and while I never had the honor of standing in front of the ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, they have always played an important role in my musical imagination. So well, thank you for opening with them.
Rachel, I think the campaign starts here. I shall get on the phone to Jeff Lynne immediately to say, look, Jeff, you've missed out a classic here. We need to work through this. Hailed by the Los Angeles Times as inspiring and accessible, a rare conductor who's also a skilled communicator with a wide-ranging repertoire. Rachel, Musique, as artistic director of that, I mean, an inspired, unexpected live music events. Share with us, Musique, how does it sort of fit into the artistic vernacular?
Well, you know, Musique is driven by several things. One of which is the audience, because what I've discovered here and all over the world is that audience members are far more adventurous than we often give them credit for. And our audience here seems to truly want something counter-conventional. They seem to have a hunger for live music events that will challenge them, that will open doors about which they have been curious, and which help them discover new possibilities about what great live music is all about. I would have to say it's also was inspired by my career as a conductor and my decision that engaging in another straight-ahead conducting gig, as it were, which would certainly not be the case with the Electric Light Orchestra, was only to repeat something which I had a sneaking suspicion was not necessary for me personally. I have been searching for answers for live music, especially insofar as it relates to the live symphony orchestra. I've been searching personally for ways to help orchestras remain relevant, to build new audiences, more diverse audiences. And it just seemed that I was at a point in my life that I could dare outside of the traditional circles. And I was fortunate enough to be in a place here in Southern California where I could attempt something completely new. And fortunately, again, we have been able to find some extraordinary success. Lastly, I would have to say, and then it's your turn, Alex, that, you know, I've often been accused of being a perfectionist, but equally, I have often also been accused of being a risk taker. And as well you might imagine, those two things would seem to be in direct conflict with one another. Those people who are generally perfectionists don't seek out new risks because they want to repeat the same acts over and over again in order to create that perfect world. And then risk takers are generally considered to be people for whom perfection is not something for which they strive. They're more interested in something brand new around the corner. I think I'm an unusual sort in that I am I embrace the tension that exists between both worlds, and the accusations that have been leveled against me are absolutely accurate. I am a perfectionist, but I am also a great risk taker. Mm. So musique is a musical entity which endeavors to find that extraordinary space that exists when perfectionism and risk-taking overlap. Your turn.
No, I'm just thinking less than the best is not best enough to actually coin a phrase.
Less than the best is not best enough.
Exactly. There we are. It's a transatlantic motto, a little maxim we can share over from that point of view. Now, we have a wonderful soul in the studio. In fact, two wonderful souls, but we'll go to Ed Wellman first, because, Ed, you're a professionally trained music teacher and musician and so on. You've had a look at Rachel's resume from that point of view. We'll talk about the June the 29th event shortly, but thoughts from yourself at this moment.
Yeah, Rachel, hello to you.
Hello.
And I ask you this because I know that you've been the conductor of the Young People's Concerts at Carnegie Hall. And in terms of what the availability is of classical music for younger people in the States, it's a bit variable here for young people to actually listen to classical music and take part in it. It kind of depends where you are and where you go to school and so forth. And over here, there are a lot of primary schools that are now not offering any music at all. And in secondary education, music's kind of been teetering on the brink of being in the curriculum or not in the curriculum over the last few years. How is classical music introduced and made available to youngsters in the States?
I thank you very much for touching on this issue, which for me has profound import. And I have to sadly report that the situation in the States is identical to the situation that you find on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, which is to say that in the school districts, which are located in the wealthier neighborhoods in the United States of America, generally speaking, the parent associations will find a way to keep instruments and music education in general alive in those public schools. And then in the schools which have less support from the community, less support from the parents, music education has disappeared entirely. And I actually, I cannot fathom how it is that the world has changed so dramatically from the period of time during which I grew up, where one had a music teacher who either came to the class or to whose class one went twice a week. Starting in the second grade, one took some recorder or flutophone, some plastic version of the recorder. Then beginning in the third grade, one picked up a band instrument. This was not a choice. This was something that everybody in the class did. I think beginning in fourth or fifth grade, the world of strings was opened. Both in middle school or junior high school and high school, it was the same thing, right through public school education, which is where I was educated. And I was educated in a fairly regular community. I mean, there was nothing, certainly my parents were lower middle class, and I mean, there were thousands of kids in our school, and yet we had three different bands, three different orchestras, three different choirs. It was, and that I think was just for the, upper grades in the high school. The lower grades had something else. But I have struggled with this, and I have found it to be quite disheartening, only because it, in this country anyway, remains a long-term conversation between interested parties and intellectual musicians.
And we've got some great music teachers and there's some great examples of music education going on. If I might ask, in your role as a conductor, because you've conducted so many of the great orchestras as a visitor, yet you've also had a career as a long-term conductor of some, how does that really work for you? Because you must have a very deep relationship with some, and yet you have to establish that same relationship almost instantly as a visiting conductor.
You know, it took me about a decade to learn the difference. So again, an interesting question for me in particular. I didn't realize that there was a vast difference between one a short-term relationship with an orchestra and a longer-term relationship. And so I, given my perfectionist streak of which I have been accused, would stand in front of, you
it's
know,
not an accusation, it's a compliment. Let's focus on that. Goodness me.
Yes, but to be a perfectionist with an orchestra who you don't know.
I'm sure, Rachel, you've never said to a violinist, you're never going to work with me ever again. Go.
No,
exactly.
But you ask for things from an orchestra with whom you work on a consistent basis, which you simply should not ask of an orchestra with which you are having two rehearsals and a performance. You come, you make friends, you love them, you do everything in your power to cause them to love you so that there's a trustworthy and rich situation on the stage so that together you can make as fabulous a concert as possible for the audience. And then you go home.
Rachel, we're going to come on to Jill Hart, who's also in the studio with us, and we want to talk about the June the 29th concert, but we're going to take a mini musical break now, and I'm going to award you the role of musical producer for this moment. We've got two choices. Obviously, looking ahead to June the 29th, we can offer you either Queen with Bohemian Rhapsody, not the William Shatner version, you'd be pleased to know, although that is quite interesting, but I won't play it today.
You don't have to go any further.
No, well, exactly. There is that. You may, I'll give you the alternative, because the alternative is Ella Fitzgerald. Gerald singing a live version of Mac the Knife, obviously created by Kurt Vile. So, where are you going to go? This is transatlantic scenario. Is it going to be Ella Fitzgerald's Mac the Knife or Bohemian Rhapsody and Queen? I know life is full of choices. This is one of them. Where are you going to send the listener and yourself?
I'm going to have to go with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really? Here they come. Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. But Rachel Wolby. Did they actually reach perfection when they recorded Bohemian Rhapsody?
They did indeed. You know, I listened to that almost as if I had not heard it before just now. And I have to say the compositional arch that Freddie Mercury drew for that piece is something which he invented. I mean, it's before that, before Bohemian Rhapsody, certainly in the world of rock and roll, it had not been tried.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that Nikki Wells, our tremendous author of the Rockstar Romance Trilogy, who's joining us on the show next week, she's listening to the show.
Rockstar Romance.
Exactly so. Her line is, "You are rocking. Great choice, Rachel." There we are. So sorted through there. It's keeping Nikki happy, which is fantastic. Jill, any questions for Rachel?
Well, what's striking me as I'm listening to the things you're talking about is that obviously apart from the music, as you were discussing with Ed, which is obviously crucial to your working life, it's obviously very much about people, about working with people, working with young people, both within music and obviously putting on concerts and things like this with all the other bods that go along with that. It must make for a very interesting life.
Well, you know, it's the only life I've ever known. I have always found myself in a situation where the people with whom I was surrounded were more important to me than anybody else, whether I was in a classroom in Harlem, New York, or in an orphanage in Cluj, Romania, or working out of a school in Manchester, England, or in South Central Los Angeles, or right here in Pasadena, where we do a tremendous amount of work with kids who are in residential foster care facilities. I just have always had the idea that the unexpected connection you could make with people through live music gave the possibility to have a truly elevated interaction, and that the notion of actual listening beyond hearing is the single most important sense that we have, which will allow us to proceed productively to the future and ensure the safety of the earth and all the people on it. I mean, if there's one thing that disappeared, and that, in my opinion, continues to disappear, it's an actual ability to just simply sit still and listen to another human being.
I think, Rachel, that is very much at the heart of the Midrick Drive message, the Siren FM message, and indeed clearly the musique message. Very quickly, let's move on to the June the 29th concert, Lost in the Stars with Patty Austin. Hopefully some of our American or West Coast correspondents, hopefully Phil Leonis, Lily Holliman and the team, and others will be able to actually sort of drop by for this. Just share with us, where can we actually see this being performed? I feel as though I should get on the jet straight away and fly over, but see how things go.
We perform in the heart of Pasadena on the historic and renowned campus of the California Institute of Technology, affectionately referred to here as Caltech, home to more Nobel Prize winners than any other campus.
It's only a matter of time, Rachel, before you get your own call from Stockholm. I can see that now.
I really am more interested in just toiling deep into the soil and making sure that my nails stay filled with the good dirt of making the things happen here on the ground. But in any event, this is a wonderful location that has a naturally brilliant outdoor acoustic. Again, as I said, in the middle of Pasadena, we're opening this Saturday, June 29th, something that I borrowed from my friends in the Irish Chamber Orchestra, because I found that it was such a provocative statement, is that the whole of music stands when they play, which for you on the other side of the pond is not so unusual. Here it is quite unusual. And also the entire band wears their finest evening clothes of their own choice. It doesn't have to be all black. They don't all look alike. And we don't have an interval. We play straight away for 90 minutes. I curate, I quilt together the story of the evening, and we sort of travel from 7:30 to 9 p.m. together, and then I say, I love you, see you next time.
Rachel, I feel as though it's been truly sensational. We haven't even had time to actually talk about your experiences as First Lady of West Virginia. We'll talk about that, but we've got two final questions we need to put to you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link on this, your debut for the Midweek Drive over on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean?
This has been probably the most exciting and happy interview I've had in a decade.
So the next critical question is, I was just blown away with respect to that. Can we look forward
in
to...
In a word.
Well, yes, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future and obviously ahead of the concerts coming up in July and August?
It would be fabulous for me.
Well, Rachel,
I would just love that. Thank you.
I think we put you through a bit of torture earlier, and I think your reward is indeed Ella Fitzgerald now. A round of applause for Rachel. Well, yeah. Fantastic stuff. Already a little bit late, but we'll carry on. Here's Mac the Knife. Okay, we'll squeeze in the whole of Ella Fitzgerald shortly, but Lily Halliman's already said tune in now to hear me on the Midweek Drive. Well, it's all right, Lily, we'll be with you very shortly. It's okay, we've got the announcement of the winner, but we've got whom online now?
We've got Alan Stevens.
We've got Alan Stevens online.
How
yay! Alan, before he goes off to Turkey, good afternoon, Alan. Good evening, whichever part of the world you happen to be in. How are you, sir?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Well, we've just been flattered, I think, beyond means by the former First Lady of West Virginia and musical director of music. She was very nice, wasn't she? Yeah,
she was a lovely lady.
Exactly, sir. I think we were impressed. She'll come back. She's on our good books.
She's a hard worker. She deserves it. Yeah.
But, Alan, why should people actually check out your performance that's taking place in Manchester very shortly? And what is it? Share with us, dear boy. Share with us.
Well, if you go to calrocity.com on the news page, you'll find an advert for Rotten Apples, which is a play which I've adapted to stage, written by Neil Leonard. Now, Neil Leonard's wife, she wrote 50 Shades of Grey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. We know it's contemporary stuff here. Carry on.
Well, I didn't know that until yesterday.
Well, there you go. But Neil Leonard's giving you the green lights to actually do this interpretation. When and where is it being performed?
It's being performed on the 14th, 18th, and 19th of July. First performance is 8:30. Second and third performance is 7:30. The first performance on the 14th is £5. On the 18th and 19th, it's only £6. It's a Lasso Gallery, 36 Charles Street, Manchester. And if you go to calrocity.com, calrocity.com, you'll find a link to their site, so you can order tickets.
Just truly tremendous. And what are you going to be doing in Turkey, Alan?
Writing, probably.
Nice. See, that's what we like to see. One day, I mean, Sarah Bullen was very taken with Alan and was very nearly going to book Alan for the Doctor Who event, which in the end, as you know, obviously budget didn't quite stretch there, but maybe, what do you think, Jill? Perhaps Lincoln Inspired 2014?
You never know. We'd certainly like to do more Doctor Who stuff, should it prove possible.
He's very good. Yes. And I think we had a good audience.
We had a
200
lovely,
or so.
We had a lovely time. We did. Yeah. We had a lovely time.
Very well,
Alex?
Indeed. I think so.
Alex, of course, chaired the whole thing admirably.
I was inspired by Alan Stevens, obviously. In fact, I'm thinking, Ed, a little expose for yourself and the listener. Alan will actually be featuring with yourself and Fiona and Katie Grimerson in the 2014 Midweek Drive calendar.
On it.
I think so. There we are. Last two questions for Alan, please. It's one of his shortest pieces for quite some time, but go.
Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yeah, I suppose so.
And can we do it again soon, please? The link, that is.
I'll see if I can fit you into my calendar.
See what he did there? Nice. See, it's seamless. That's the important thing. We might try and reach him when he's actually in Turkey next week. You know, it works so well. We'll be communicating, but we'll exchange details with that. It'd be good. Alan Parsons Project to take us over to Los Angeles and Lily Holliman. So much to pack into the show. Quite unbelievable. Ed, you got more details on this competition?
Siren FM are running a competition. It's open as of today. It's for you to win tickets to the Waddington International Air Show, which takes place on the 6th and the 7th of July. They're family tickets, two adults, two children, worth £57. To have a chance of winning...
$114 or thereabouts.
Oh, that, yeah.
Just you can enter if you're in the States, as long as you can arrange your own transport. It's there.
You've got till the 6th of July to get here. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is to answer this question. Which anniversary of the Dambusters raid was celebrated this year? If you know the answer, head over to sirenonline.co.uk.
Sirenonline.co.uk. Of course, we had the Thunderbirds from America who were over last year. Very good, very talented. Time now for this.
And now, star of stage and screen, a lover of mystery, and an international citizen of the world, this is Lily Holliman.
Lily Holliman, Lily Holliman. Hey. So, Lily, where are you in Los Angeles?
Oh, I'm actually deep down in hiding in a bunker that is Bill Larness's apartment.
Oh. Is he in quarantine? Have you got a hazmat suit on? Because that's important.
Yes, I do.
Good.
Yes,
that's all right.
Lovely. You know. And so does Fuzz.
Nice. Very yes. Fuzz, of course, so being.
Cat has that too. Yeah,
that's nice. I was just beginning to worry about that, but all's well with the world. But what a fantastic co-presentation of Chilpack Hollywood you provided. As I say, you are the new Jamie Summers, the Bionic Woman, with Dean Haglund as Oscar Goldman. You know, it's fantastic stuff there.
Yes. Potential, right?
Genius. And as I say, hopefully you meet up with Charlotte Fortune when she's over into the States end of July time. So I think she heads over.
Oh, I would not miss it.
There we are. I've done an electronic introduction. HBO. It's a fabulous show. It's a fabulous network. It's home box office, and you've just been taking part in a pilot. So share with us, what's this pilot all about?
So this pilot is called Money and Fame, and it is. It's kind of a behind-the-scenes comedy about a sort of like an American Idol type thing. So it takes place on an American Idol type show, and it's Larry Sanders-esque, and it's not officially HBO, but it's a fabulous pilot that's currently being shopped around, and we had a great time filming it. I play a very disgruntled PA.
Hmm.
A lot of improv, my whole part.
Yeah.
A lot of very funny actors.
Have you based it on any kind of production assistants you might have worked with in various sort of productions?
Oh, yeah. And my own inner disgruntled PA. You know.
Yeah, it's always important to actually work through that. Well, you know, fingers crossed, because obviously pilots they can do all. But you know, we're hoping for success here. We will get it. It's Lily Holloman, for goodness sakes. You know, Lily Holloman, who should have her own show by now. You know, literally called the Lily Holloman Transatlantic Hour. Note that Transatlantic Hour. I said that now.
I agree. And you know, I just got a note from my PA that I should probably explain what a PA is.
Ah, yeah.
As in, which is actually a production assistant.
Yeah. Or in radio, BA, broadcast assistant.
Make things happen.
As you do.
World of television.
Yeah, precisely. Now, Lily, you've caught bits of the show, you've heard bits of it. Do you know what a special show today is?
This show has been absolutely special. Now, it's an award show. Mm. We're talking about. I'm in my black tie.
Nice.
I walked down the red carpet already, so.
Very good.
I'm ready to go.
What
did I do?
Well, I think we'll invite Jill to once more join us to effectively read out the nominations are for, of course, Contributor of the Year. They are five of them. Go for
the
it.
The nominations are Cameron Tilbury.
Yes.
Sarah Bullimore.
Mm-hmm.
Katie Grimason.
Yes.
Ed Wellman.
Yes.
I'm Phil Leonis.
There you are. You see, that's the whole thing. Tasha Turney could have been in there, but she's been working for Mr. Big. I kid thee not. I saw a movie this afternoon, a little short video, Market Raisin, for
that's
camera,
yes.
Natasha Turney, directed by Mr. Big. Very sorry, I thought his character in Live and Let Die. Anyway, the envelope is there.
The envelope
is
being camera. Passed.
Is it on camera? Can we see it on camera? It's sort of
very exciting.
It's there, okay. This is the moment where you say, and the winner is.
Right,
in fact, actually, just hang on a second. Fanfare coming up. Ready for this? 10 seconds. You just feel to get a little bit more now, you know. I know he's set for this because Phil's tense. It could be Phil Linus, could be Cameron Tilbury, could be Katie Grimason, could be Ed Wellman, could be.
Is Rachel Warby conducting this?
No, actually, we couldn't quite get out of that. Hold it back. Hold down it. Right, okay, and.
Okay, the winner of the 2013 Hilda Ayres Southside Midweek Drive Award is. Dramatic pause. Ed Wellman.
Oh!
I think it's going to be. I pass you
and he
over
is now being presented with this wonderful trophy.
Gosh, and I'm
by
in
Alex.
Indeed, not just one,
very
but
beautiful.
Two. In fact, I'll ask you, Jill, to present these because he never gets a chance to see this. And Richard Fitzwilliams has recommended
wonderful
if he can't
DVDs.
Go and see this. He's got
the Spinal Tap and Lawrence of Arabia.
Spinal Tap and Lawrence of Arabia DVD stuff there.
Well, can I just say thank you? And I'm looking around
the trophy
and some wonderful names in
true Wimbledon fashion.
Including the winner from 2002, I noticed, Alex Lefchew. Hannah O'Brien, 2012. And there I am.
Yeah, there you are, you see.
And for once, somebody spelt my name right, which is even better.
There. We hope Phil isn't too despondent. We know the webcam. Lily, you're going to be there to hopefully sort of ease him through this. I mean, he did make the nominations.
Well, he said it's an honor just to be nominated, and he understands that maybe for next year he should change out of his pajamas for the show. Step it up.
Well, you know, we like to see that there's, I mean, likewise Sarah Bullimore. I mean, you know, frequently she comes in just dressed in her 90, and we're just not sure, really.
What can we say?
Yeah.
But, and Katie Grimmison, of course, well done as well. So it's all sort of through. We'll be taking photo shoots. A bit like Wimbledon, of course, Ed. You get a chance to sort of cherish it. Maybe you might have a nice one since it comes back in one piece.
This is very exciting. I hope Ed got a crown after that introduction.
Well, would you like? I mean,
very royal.
Lily, you haven't managed to see the particular trophy that it's actually won. I mean, Ed, would you like to describe
it?
It's held it up now because I think it's a significant piece, really, of silverware, really.
It is. It's got a nice wooden circular bit at the bottom,
yes,
and then it's got a replica radio microphone on the top. I'm assuming it is, and it's not a secret bugging device.
Now, please. How long have we worked together?
and it says in big red letters, on the air. Actually, I'm just noticing it is. It's more than it appears.
It is actually a radio.
Very clever.
It's a genuine routine. Now, we hope, I mean, technically, I know that Phil has been promising this for quite some time. It's going to be interesting when he works through that because, of course, the Leonis Holliman production team went into full force when, about 12 months ago, they came up with this.
Hi, this is filmmaker Phil Leonis.
And this is actress Lily Holliman.
If we've learned anything from all of our travels and adventures,
it's that Hannah O'Brien is a snickerdoodle.
She's also
the Rookie of the Year
on Siren FM's Midweek Drive.
Yeah. Katie Grillman. Katie, you see, I'm just eliding them together. It's like a portmanteau of a term there. Katie Grimmison, Ed Wellman. It's Katie Grellman. There we are. Katie sends her best. She sent in a text to say congratulations.
Thank you,
Ed,
KG.
Ed, we're going to have to record one for you this year now.
Yes, please.
Well, it's there. I mean, clearly you'll understand why we didn't have Ilana Raine on the show tonight, because I think she would have just gone, she would have been sending in text votes, even though it wasn't the text vote, it was already decided. She would have gone crazy on the whole thing. But thankfully we held things through. Anyway, apart from that, anything else from the show catch your ear, Lily, that you'd like to sort of comment on? Or has Phil provided you with notes as he did with Chilpack Hollywood this week?
Little bit of both, I have to admit. A little bit of both.
Okay.
I did want to start with Rachel Warby. I loved what she had to say about music and the tension between being a risk taker and a perfectionist, and her kind of disillusionment on music education in America, which I think is valid. And I actually am more hopeful than ever, because I think music education did have to kind of crash and burn in order to evolve into something richer and more approachable. And there are a lot of systems in place right now and a lot of amazing music teachers that I have witnessed currently, and a lot of teachers who really understand that kids, they need to find an in, they need to find a door, and teachers are allowing kids to incorporate modern pop music that they love and really learning instruments and then going into the classical music and learning about that. And especially what I love is, I don't know if you've heard of Dudamel, our local conductor for the L.A. Philharmonic. Mm-hmm. He's from Venezuela. And he came up through the El Sistema, which is this huge, huge, giant program in Venezuela for underprivileged children to join an orchestra. And he's started that right here in Los Angeles on a smaller level, but it's slowly but surely growing, and kids are really healing and finding a community.
And that's the positive thing that we're looking for. I had to smile with Nikki Wells' latest comment, actually. It refers back to the competition that we're running, obviously. The question, once again, Ed, is for the competition?
The question is a
prize ticket, yes, just one more time.
Which anniversary of the Dambusters raid was celebrated this year?
To which Nikki, who of course is German, I am so entering the competition even though I'm obviously conflicted, viz the question. Wish me good luck.
Good luck, Nikki, but you'll lose. So,
I have it. What was the question again?
Which anniversary of the Dambusters raid was celebrated this year?
There we are. I could feel the telepathic communication coming across there, thinking yes, and I think the listener probably caught up on that. Send your details in to
sirenonline.co.uk,
and all will be made perfectly clear about that. Will you be taking? I mean, because presumably he'll be. I mean, possibly in a wheelchair. I don't know, but he's going to be back to peak fitness. That's the important thing. It's visualization. Will you be taking Ed? Taking Ed.
You can if you like. Yes.
Oh, I'm all of a fluster ever since I started wearing that purple tutu. did you see it, Lily, by the way?
I did not. My computer was not being...
It broke the computer, didn't it? That's what happened.
It
broke the computer. Will you be taking Phil to the Pasadena event or one of the concerts from Musique, of course? Because I'm sure we could set up some sort of way which you guys could actually go there and report on it for us.
What dates are those?
That would be June 29th, the first one. And then we have others coming up as well, which will be July 27th. And I think August the 17th, you'll be into production work, fully-fledged production work for the movie.
Maybe July 27th could work.
Yeah. But there we are. You know, it's exciting things. Jill, any questions for Lily?
I was interested in when you were talking about the pilot that you're working on earlier.
Yes.
How... when you're starting on a brand new show like that, do you get very attached to your character and to the pilot at that stage so that you are disappointed if things don't go ahead and thrilled if they do?
Attached to the character? Well, you know, yes. But I have learned that any opportunity to express myself in a creative way in any given moment is a huge blessing, and so I don't really have many attachments going forward. I'm thrilled if it works out, and
which I'm
also thrilled that I had the opportunity to begin with. So, and especially since I got to write most of the part, that was kind of a new thing for me. It was all completely improvised. So that aspect I am a little bit attached to, and am inspired to continue to do, whether this goes forward or not. I need to start to do more writing in 2013.
Good.
I just had a birthday, so...
I think we wished you a sort of electronic virtual happy birthday, Lily. But I think we'd like to say once again, happy belated birthday to Lily Holloman.
Happy birthday
to Lily Holloman.
Thank you.
Spontaneous. You know, this is the crucial thing. We'll work on that. The Lily Holloman hour, I think that's going to sort of develop on every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
So any other little highlights from the programme this evening? I mean, we've still got a...
I'd like to weigh in on your conversation with Arthur Weingarten, considering TV from the 1960s.
Yes.
Which I think...
No, she didn't say that word. Don't worry, it's okay. It was, I think, shoot. That was the thing that was actually mentioned there. The shoot TV from the 1960s. Sorry, Lily, carry on. It's a dodgy line.
Okay. One of the things that I'd like to add about the 1960s is the ideas in television in the 1960s were grand. And a lot of the time, the people who were making the shows, their reach exceeded their grasp. They didn't have the technology or the budget to completely fulfill their vision. Like, there's something very comforting about Trek episodes in which it's a little bit more simplistic than we get now. Now we get a very polished, perfect product, and it continues to evolve more and more, and there's something sort of relatable to the average lay person, if you will, of that feeling of your reach exceeding your grasp, having these big ideas and creating something still beautiful yet imperfect. And I think that's why people love, another reason why people love these 1960s TV shows.
And they resonate even though Lily Holloman wasn't born at the time. It's fantastic. It's just great
stuff. Yes, and also in the 1960s, Tao, there were a lot less choices, and so people really were connected by television. Now, if you name a TV show, you're not sure if somebody would have seen it. But back then, everybody saw the same shows.
Mm, exactly. It's a water cooler moment, just in case you were wondering.
Hi, my name's Oliver Heath. I'm an eco-designer, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Thank you, Oliver. Oliver will be talking about the best way to live life ecologically in a friendly way probably tomorrow morning, because we've had to juggle him around in all sorts of ways, as one does. It's been that kind of show. And also, bearing in mind the randomizer, could you select a number, Lily, between 2 and 26, please?
7.
7. Well, this is the message that the universe is sending to yourself and the listener.
When in a hurry, step one for changing the entire world is falling in love with it as it already is. Same for changing yourself. You like the universe.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
There we are, you see.
That is lovely. Thank you. Thank you. Always a good reminder.
It is, actually. Yeah, you just got to work our way through that whole process. So we salute Cameron Tilbury, Arthur Weingarten, Annette Andre, Michelle Monroe, Rachel Werby, Alan Stevens, and your good self, Lily Holloman. But we need to throw those last two questions to Lily Holloman. Yeah, she's,
I have one last
yes.
plug.
Go.
I need to get in there tonight, and I just already have started to evolve into Christopher Walken tonight at 8 p.m. in Hollywood. All About Walken has a rare reunion show.
No.
At the Dragonfly in Hollywood. Yes, 7 Christopher Walken impersonators take the stage, including me.
It's a little known fact. I've shown you Lily's photographs.
You have, Alex.
Pictures of Lily, as the Who might have said. As a little cultural reference you may or may not appreciate. We'll dig it out next time. But yes, so could you imagine that charming soul actually sort of becoming a fully fledged Christopher Walken impersonator?
It is beyond
most people, but that's acting, you see. Should we break into a Christopher Walken moment? Would you like to maybe ask Ed how he feels about being, you know, the official champion in terms of contributors? I think it was probably the Myathon, plus, of course, his sensational driving skills, which, you know, could certainly teach some native voices people a thing or two. Only kidding, Randy. You know, some of the ways forward. Would you like to sort of, you know, go into Christopher Walken mode to ask him how he feels? You know, interview Ed for about 30 seconds, a la Christopher Walken. Cue Lily. There's a bit of improv. Go.
Hi.
Hello,
congratulations.
Lily.
Wow, this is a huge honor. I'm so proud of you. How does it feel to be on top of the world?
It feels in a good place to be. It feels, you know, it feels like I'm home. In a funny sort of way. And I've got a lot of film watching to do as well. I also got Lawrence of Arabia.
Notice that, because I knew you wouldn't be able to get to see it in the Lincoln Festival of Film, you see. We like to think about our prizes. We just gave Hannah a cake last year, of course.
And so, well, I could have baked the cake. And the Spinal Tap.
Is musical. Never seen Spinal Tap. In for a treat.
Clear. So there we are.
Last two questions for Lily Holloman, please. Jill.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I found it very interesting. Thank you.
Good.
So much.
Oh, it's kind of
scary, can we look forward to hearing from you again very shortly?
I look forward to it. You know,
she's getting
have a British accent.
Yeah,
myself.
It is. It's great. She's sounding more Dick Van Dyke with every call. It's fantastic. Listen, I tell you what, Lily, next week it's our pre-July Independence Day 4th celebration thingy. Are you up for joining us then?
We'll do.
We might have Lily and Phil on the show. You know.
We could have a duo.
Exactly. Because we say get well soon, and Jill, have you enjoyed the show?
Absolutely, it's been wonderful.
Coming back again sometime?
Oh yes.
She's life modelling. Life modelling. Do you have to take your clothes off? just a thought. We don't go there. Not on this time of day. Ed, enjoyed it.
It's been great. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Keep of the Castle, Four Tops online now. Can we all say bye bye?
Bye bye.
Goodbye.
And Christopher.
Bye. Thank you.
There's a lot of us being pushed around.